Good evening and welcome to Italian Impact Weekly. I'm your co-host, Steve Stefano Mancini.
And my name is Claudio Relsano. And as always, we appreciate you tuning in. Steve, how's everything? How's everything going?
Everything is wonderful, Claudio. Now, for the folks that are listening, you may not have picked up the sarcasm in that, but if you had been listening to me about 20 minutes later, you would say, it's been a long day. Yeah. It's tough doing these at the end of the day. I can't lie. Especially, you know.
There's worse things. What do they say? Don't say that I have to do a show. I get to do a show.
That's right. That's right. When we're not 6 feet below ground, we're 6 feet above ground. Right. Or in my case, 5'10" and a half.
Well, I was looking forward to doing the show today. I had a little bit of a tough weekend. We didn't do so well. We're winding the season down. And then there's always somebody in the stands who wants, which I'm going to ask our guest today about that. There's always somebody in the stands who knows how to tell you how to coach. Meanwhile, they... You know, they everybody knows the name of the unknown soldier. Unfortunately, it's the wrong name. But anyway, today's guest was an all-conference wrestler and team captain at Liberty State College, now West Liberty University. In 1976, he was hired to be the wrestling coach at Pitt Johnstown. And since 2008, he's had the dual role of AD and head coach. He is the winningest coach in wrestling history. And the reason why I know that, because his wonderful nephew, Dom Pecora, absolutely loves his uncle. And I really appreciate that. Dom is a great guy as well. But 21 regional championships, NCAA Division II national champions, coach of the year 16 times, PA Sports Hall of Fame, Eastern Borough Chapter, West Liberty Sports Hall of Fame, PA Wrestling Coaches Hall of Fame, Pitt Johnstown Hall of Fame, and he was also inducted a few years ago to the Italian American Sports Hall of Fame, Pittsburgh Chapter. He's got all kind of accolades. We'd be here all day, but it's Mr. Pat Pecora. Pat, thank you so much for being on the show.
No, thank you, guys. It sounds like a fun cast, you know. It's always great to talk to two guys, like I said, whose name ends in a vowel.
Yeah, so. Well, you got two of them right here. We got a lot of vowels. And before we start, I got to tell you, your nephew Dom is obviously a wonderful guy, wonderful coach. There's some good news coming up about him shortly. But he thinks the absolute world of you.
He's the best. He's the best. I love, you know, of course, Dom. I call him my third son. And, he is my brother's son. And Dom kind of taken the path that I took in terms of coaching. And plus he has this real strong, belief in the Italian heritage, you know. And so that's something that we both share. It's always one in every generation, you know, that carries that Italian flag on. And Dom's the one of our next generation. And he's a fantastic coach. He's done a great job. Super young man.
He is. And, you know, that's something that with Steve and I, that's one of the things that we connected about is our Italian heritage and how important it is to us and the traditions and more so the values that we were taught and we pass on to our family. You know what? Let's start off with that. Tell us about where your family is from in Italy and some of the traditions / values that were entrenched in you and that you pass on.
Well, my family is from Agropoli, which is a small seaside town, you know, right below Naples, and it's from in the Salerno Campania district of Italy, and so I grew up in a very, you know, Italian family, and it was my mom was obviously full blood Italian, my dad's full blood Italian, all my grandparents were born in Italy, right in the same area, you know. And so so we always had this strong, you know, Italian-American, you know, background, you know, type of thing. It's funny because my first name, my real name is Pasquale.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good old Italian, right? And of course, it was Americanized, in fact, but it's still my birth certificate and license, Pasquale Pecora. Talk about the values and things. When I first got the head coaching job at Pitt Johnstown, I mean, I was 22 years old, and I had never, here I am. So I've never been an assistant coach. I was at East Allegheny 1 year where Dom coached for my first year out of college, and then I got offered the job at Pitt Johnstown. So I was never an assistant coach. And so my philosophy right away was, you know, how am I going to, what kind of coach am I going to be? And I looked at my mother and father, and they always believed that they were doing a good job as parents if their children were close. And so I thought, okay, I'll do a good job as a coach if I can make my team, my wrestlers, feel like they're brothers. And if I could get them to feel that about each other, then I've accomplished my job as being a good coach. And so that's how the whole philosophy started from the family. And it has grew. In fact, our motto is brothers for life. That's how I want my wrestlers to feel, that they are trying to make each other better. And so that's the whole philosophy of our program and mine as a coach is, can we achieve something together that we couldn't achieve by ourselves? And so, and that comes from definitely my Italian background with my mother and father, very traditional. My mom was, the type of woman that was exuberated love. You know, whenever you would come into the house, I mean, there was a hug, a kiss, and a plate of spaghetti. You know, that's all there was to it. And my dad, he was a man of respect. You know, he was, you know, the man of honor and discipline. And so we grew up, but he was a firm believer in the family. And he always said, we have our Sunday. I talk about our Sunday dinners, and it was like mass. And my dad was the priest, and he would say the sermons, and you would learn, you know, from the sermons about the family. And he would always say that the family is the most important unit in society, and once the family unit starts to disintegrate, then society will disintegrate. So he was very big in the family, keeping the family together. And it goes into my coaching philosophy. That's the toughest job in coaching, is keeping it together, trying to keep your family together. And I always say there's three philosophies in coaching. You could use the military philosophy, the business philosophy, or with me, it's the family philosophy. I coach a team like my parents ran a family.
You brought a lot of good, interesting points there. So give me an example. How did they instill that in you, though, to make you feel close, like within the brothers kind of name? I mean, what did they do? Because I thought that's kind of interesting that you said, you know what, you know, you've done a good job when your kids are close. How did they do that?
I think they did that by, number one, when they were always talking about the family stuck together. You know, when you were in the house, okay, people can, you know, disagree and argue with one another, whatever you want to say. But once you went outside the home, it was the family. You were together. And I remember I had two older brothers, and my dad, you know, they were responsible for my safety. You know, if something happened to me, then guess what? He was going to be very mad at them. And the same with me. I had a younger sister. It started off as, number one, protection. You just were there, and you can always count on your family. And I always felt that growing up, that no matter what happened out there in society or out there, even in the world, I always had my family. And I think it was just something that my mother and father talked about. And we felt that way, you know, that's your brother, that's your sister, and this is a family, and, you know, we stick together no matter what. And I think also growing up in an Italian household, that it was like, you know, because there was still a little bit of, prejudice and things going on, you know, with Italians. And so you had to, you know, you had to stick together, you know, with your family, because, out there was going to be some, negative things about, being Italian or anything like that. So it was a source of pride that, you were Pecora, you know, that was my dad, you know, you're a Pecora. Be proud of that. Be proud of that name and carry it proudly and make us proud. We always wanted to make our parents proud. And so we, our oldest siblings, like even now, we're all very, very close and tight. And I think that's something that you just, you have to just grow up with. It's hard to be taught if you haven't grown up that way.
Right. Let me ask you though, because you said something else that was good. If the family breaks down, and I 1000% agree with you, mm-hmm. if the family breaks down, society breaks down. And when you look around what's happening in this country, mm-hmm. let's be honest, there is a war on families. They are dismantling the family. And lo and behold, look around you. You have total chaos and anarchy. You know, how do you kind of like, you know, people that are listening that kind of see this? I mean, you tell them, hey, listen, we got to rebuild the family. How do you rebuild families when it's just not being taught? I mean, you probably work with a lot of players. And some of them probably come from decent families, but maybe some of them don't. I mean, how do we teach this, put this back into society?
I think that's what I feel, why I've been coaching all these years. Wrestling is just a vehicle of which you have an opportunity to be a positive impact on young men, you know. And so wrestling is what brings us together, but it's that family philosophy. And if you talk to any wrestler that I've ever coached, they feel that. And I think the more young men that go out into the world that lead this program, they feel that family unity, and so they want to have it. Because we talk about being not only being a good husband, a good father, a good person, and then yet still be tough at the same time. You know, can you be strong and gentle? And that's the and that's the thing to kind of incorporate. And so I think that with my own family, I do the same thing. We have, me and my wife, Tracy, have four children and now 8 grandchildren. And we've always talked about the importance of the family unit and the importance of, keeping it together. You know, just like I said, the important philosophy, it's most important. The toughest part of coaching is keeping it together. But if you think about it, the toughest part of every part of our society is keeping it together, whether it's your family, whether it's your business, you know, it's any outside group is trying to keep that together. And so it's tough. It's easy to, forget about it, you know, but can you keep the family together through thick and thin? And if you could do that, then I'll tell you what, you're going to come out and your children are going to feel the same way. The grandchildren feel the same way. And every wrestler that ever wrestled for me is going to have that feeling. I'm hoping they're going to take that into their own personal lives.
Coach, a couple questions. Number one, how have athletes changed over the years? Personally?
Not much.
Okay.
I think that's a little overstated sometimes. I think there are still a lot of young athletes who want the guidance, who want the discipline, who want the coaching. And now I always believe that in the statement that no one cares how much you know till they know how much you care. And I think that when you let your athletes know that you care about them, not only as athletes but as people, then they're going to care about, you know, what you say and what you know. So I mean, you got to coach a little bit differently than you did, obviously, 20 years ago. I'm a little, if I'm not evolving as a coach, then I'm not evolving as a person. And you're always evolving. I'm obviously, your coaching, you know, gets a little bit different philosophy, but not extremely. And I find young people are still, you know, craving to be pushed and to try to be the best they can be in their sport and then in their academics. And I think if they realize that you care about them as people, not only as athletes, that you can bring the best out of them, and they want to. They want to do that. They want to please you, and they also want to do well for themselves. And if they know that you're trying to bring the best out of them for them, you know, and that you care as much about them and their success as you do your own. And like I said, if we, when you do that to a whole team and they're doing it to each other, that's when you can accomplish things that you never thought you could accomplish.
And what you said, that line, it was, is the theme of my book. People won't care, or your team won't care much, you know, tell you much how much you care. I got that from Dick Vermeil, so I love that. But also, now I've been maybe too critical of the way baseball has changed, the teaching methods, the mechanics. It's really, in my opinion, and you can see it in the numbers, it's not good. How has wrestling changed any, the technique, the mechanics, for the good or bad? Okay, for the good or bad?
Unbelievably. Well, I think the good.
Okay.
You know, kids are wrestling at such a young age now. They're so much better at, you know, heck, 10 years old than, heck, when I was growing up. I mean, you were lucky to start wrestling in ninth grade, you know, and now they're starting at 5 and 6 years old. So, obviously, the technique is way further along than it ever was. And so you have to keep up with the with that type of technique, because it's evolving. You know, the sport has evolved. And so you definitely have to keep up with it. But that's part of, as a coach, I love that part, too. It's a teaching, you know, teaching aspects of the sport. But I think the most important part of the technical aspect of coaching, and it's not just wrestling, is you have to find that what you believe are the, some people call them basic skills. I don't like calling them basic skills or fundamental skills. I call them essential skills. And so I have a list of essential skills that I developed over the years, and that you tell your guys that these are essential skills. These are the things you must work on every single day. Now, when you say the word basic and fundamental, people think, oh, I know them, they're easy. That's why I use the word essential. So I think every coach who coaches that sport has to figure out what are the essential skills of that sport, and then everybody on the team has to try to master the essential skills, and then you work individually on their individual technique, that they're going to be a little bit different because of their body size and makeup and strength level and leverage and things like that. But I think the key is the evolving around what I call the essential skills.
See, you hit it right there, and that's when I've been against baseball. They want to put a blanket on everybody, even a kid who runs a 6'6", 60, they want him to be a power hitter, and that's not his game.
Right.
But they want everybody to cookie cutter. Everybody has to bat this way.
Right.
To me, and again, it's not an opinion. Go look at the averages. 217, 213, 189, 179, 210. If somebody's hitting 260, you say, damn, he's having a good season.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was coming up, 260, you were getting booed.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. You know, you don't just put a blanket on it. So,
nope. You have to. That's why each individual. You have to coach each individual differently.
I had twins that batted differently. Exactly.
So, yeah. There's a like, you know, like I always would say about boxing. You know, every good boxer has to know, you know, a jab, a right cross, an uppercut. But everybody's going to look different.
Sure.
You know, Muhammad Ali's uppercut and cross are different than Mike Tyson's and Rocky Marciano's because of their body type.
That's right.
And how they were built and things like that. So everybody has to learn the essential skill of those maneuvers, but each one of them is going to do them differently, you know, because of their body type, you know. And that's where the coach has to coach everybody differently. Of course, mentally, you have to coach everybody different mentally, you know, and find out what makes each one tick, you know.
You know, Coach, it's funny you say that, because when I coached hockey for decades, and one of the things I used to tell my players, I said, watch the pros. They're not doing anything super elaborate. They're just doing the fundamentals so well. Pass, receive a pass, shot, you know, skating. They just do it so well that you think, oh, my God, this guy's good. It's like, no, he's just mastered. Yeah. Like you said, when you call it the basics, like, there's certain things you have to do in every sport. If you can't do this, you're not going to be very good in the sport. Right. And it's funny because when I was I was military, I was stationed in Japan, and I used to take Aikido. And for the first, I don't know how many months, my instructor was a Japanese, my sensei, he was Japanese. And so for the first few months, all we did was learn how to fall. He would throw us, and we would fall, because you had to learn how to fall correctly before I could teach you all these throwing moves, because now you're going to get tossed. So we would just learn all these different ways to fall correctly. But I want to go back, because you said that, you know, a lot of these kids are starting earlier. And, you know, when I coached hockey, they – you know, they tried to take the contact out at younger ages and teach it later. I mean, there was a good to that, and there was a bad to that. The good to that was, you know, these kids' bodies are still developing, and you don't want kids, you know, seeing some, you know, some big hit in the NHL and then trying to go out and, you know, relive the glory and just pop some other kid just because it looks cool. At the same time, if you don't teach them how to take a hit, you know, how to absorb a hit, how to properly give a hit, well, then, you know, it's a little different when you're teaching them at 14, 15, when their bodies are a little different, maybe a little stiffer. And now if you do it wrong, you get injured. So I'm curious on your thought. Do you think there's a point where maybe the physicality, it's too young for them?
I think with wrestling and probably all sports, starting at a young age, again, I think the biggest thing that young athletes miss are back to the essential skills. They're not being taught the essential skills. Again, that's why I don't use that word fundamental or basic. I use the word essential because every sport, they have to learn the essential skills. Now, the coach has to figure out what those essential skills are, and then you got to practice them over and over and over and over again. I think the problem now is that the competition phase of when they're younger starts too early. And I think what happens in sports is they're competing to win so early that they overlook the essential skills, and they run into the competition part too quickly. And I think that's where we lose a lot of young athletes over the years. You'll see in elementary school, you'll see dozens and dozens of kids, hundreds involved in sports. And then by the time ninth grade, it starts dwindling, you know, because I think there's too much of an emphasis on winning and not just competing, right, but it's on winning. And then in doing that, you're losing the teaching of the essential skills, because you're just trying to, you know, find things that help me win now, you know, help me win this match or this game when I'm 10. Which isn't going to help me when I'm 15 if I haven't, you know, mastered the essential skills, because now I can't move on, I can't grow. And so I think the biggest problem with young sports is it's just, I think we get to the competitive part too quickly, and we don't learn just to enjoy the sport for what it is and learn the essential skills and get used to competing and practicing and enjoy what you're doing. You know, it's the same with education. You know, I think, you know, you have to, you know, teach, you know, children how to, you know, to look forward to being educated and not, you know, spend, you know, that time so quickly on, okay, we, you know, testing, you know, and getting, you know, everything labeled on whether someone's doing this or that. Let's get them to enjoy the educating. Into education. So, but it's tough. It's tough because when you're young, boom, you know, the parents and everybody. And that's the other thing that's different more now is the parents are involved.
Too much.
Which is too much. I'm going to ask you about that after our break.
We're going to take a break here. Yeah. But, Pat, you know what? Before we're going to take a break, I want to say something, though, because, you know, we're going to talk about the parents, but you talked about something else. They're competing. The competition is too early, because what happens is now you got these coaches, you know, thinking like, I've got a 10-year-old who's going to make it to the pros. Right. The parents are trying to gravy train off the kid, and now you're grinding that kid. You're trying to grind that kid out to be a superstar at age 9, 10, 11, 12 when they're not ready for it because their bodies have not even come close to fully developing. And then what happens is you start sitting kids because now you're at the tournament and you want to win the tournament so bad that you put other kids on the bench. And 10 year point, it's a disaster. And it's like, what are these kids really getting out of this? Because I'm going to tell you something, they mostly brain dump it after a year or two. They're not going to remember that. Because you know what it comes down to? People are racing to get to the top of the mountain, but they're missing they're missing the journey to get to the top of the mountain. And most of them are never even going to make it to the top of the mountain. And that's the worst part. But, pal, we're going to come right back. Let's take a quick break. And, Claudio, all yours.
Mayor, you can hear all of our shows on www.italianimpactweekly.com and www.crsmmedia.com and hear such great guests as Mario Andretti, Vince Ferragamo, Vince Papale, and Chris Corciani, as well as many successful businessmen and women in the Italian community. If you're looking to promote your business, please connect with us at questions@italianimpactweekly.com. Not only can we air your commercials, but we can produce one for you as well, and we promise to get you as much publicity as we possibly can at a great price. And don't forget about my show, the Claudio Relsano Show. I've had such great guests as Rocky Blyer, Jim Rooker, Sid Bream, Dick Vermeil, Ken Griffey Sr., Robin Cole, Mario Andretti, Vinny Pazienza, and unfortunately, a very good friend of mine who recently passed was on the show, Mr. Roman Gabriel. So check that show out. Don't forget about my book, Lead from the Heart Up, Not the Neck Up, How to Create a Positive Winning Culture on the Field and in the Office. You can get that at Barnes & Noble in Robinson Township. I think there's one or two left. You can also get it on my website at ClaudioRelsano.com. And let's party for KC Golf Event hosted by Kennedy Catholic Family of Schools will be held at Tam O'Shanter Golf Course May 18th, 9 a.m. shotgun start. There's still some openings for registration for foursomes. It is located at 2961 South Hermitage Road in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. Only $125 per player. Please connect with Maria Metters at 330-559-8891. That's 330-559-8891. It's a great school, great cause. I did a speaking engagement for them a few months ago. Wonderful people. And finally, upcoming guest for this show is Sean Stellato, the agent, the Italian agent that everybody was talking about last year. He's a great, great guy, and we can't wait to have him on the show. We'll talk about the upcoming draft and how successful his players were in getting drafted. And like I say, he's a great guy. We'll be right back with our very special guest, Pat Pecora.
Thanks to Greater Pittsburgh Travel. For any of your travel needs, let Tom and the team at Greater Pittsburgh Travel know, and they'll take care of you. For more information, call 412-331-2244 or visit their website at www.greaterpittsburghtravel.com. For all of your plumbing needs, be sure to try Pellucci Plumbing. Nick and the team have decades of experience and will get you back up and running. For more information, call Pellucci Plumbing at 412-782-5050. And we want to thank the Calabria Club of Pittsburgh. If you're interested in learning more, you can find their contact information on Facebook at Calabria Club of Pittsburgh. Again, thanks Domenica and the team at the Calabria Club of Pittsburgh for your support. And we want to thank La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei, the only nonprofit school in Pittsburgh endorsed by the Italian Consulate. If you're interested in learning Italian or have your children being immersed in the Italian culture and language, be sure to give them a call at 412-404-7070. And that's La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei. We'd also like to thank Chris Gonzalez from the Knights of Columbus. If you have any questions about joining the Knights of Columbus, reach out to Chris Gonzalez at 412-605-9074. All right, welcome back, folks. Pat, again, as we left off right before the break, we were talking about why parents should be banned from sports. I tell you, when I was coaching hockey, I used to say that they should stick the parents somewhere else and make them watch the game on a closed monitor, because I think parents and I fundamentally think this comes down to money. Money has ruined sports because the parents are looking at their kids. They see something. They see a stack of money, in my opinion. And I've coached for years, and I coached competitively. Colorado, you've coached competitively. Yep, and these parents, and you've done it. They think, like, my kid is going to be in the pros, and if they're not, it's your fault. It's not the kids.
You're right, but it's also
going to get a full ride.
It's also the ego. It's also the ego of the parent, the coach, the dad, because he knows everything, and he wants to impress everybody.
Go ahead, Pat. Your thoughts.
You just have so much free time now as parents, where, when I was growing up, my dad and mom didn't come to your little league games. Number one, your dad was working all day, and he wasn't, my dad was a barber, so he was working until 8, 9 o'clock at night. you know, and he wasn't running home to see your Little League game. And your mom had other children in the house, and she had to, you know, take care of everybody. And so they weren't at your Little League games and you know, all the way through that. You went and competed. And I remember even in high school when I would wrestle, I mean, that, you know, your parents didn't come because it just wasn't, you know, that type of atmosphere. I'd come home and my mom would call fighting, hey, did you win your fight tonight? You know, she never, and my dad, you know, they just didn't, they weren't that involved in it. And so, but anyway, I think now my kids, we were very involved because, you know, me and my wife, you had the time, you know, and it's just a different world. And so I remember, you know, my wife was saying, you know, you got to coach the Little League team and help out with that. That's okay, you know. And here I was a college coach, and I hadn't been, the last time I was in, you know, saw young athletes, and, you know, we were at a baseball field that had logs on the side and you know, rocks all over the field and no one there. And now I walk into our Little League, you know, facility, and my God, they had dugouts, they had phones, they had a press box, you know, they had lights. And I'm like, oh my God. And the parents did everything. They ran a concession stand, they cut the grass. This field was so well groomed, it was crazy. And they were all involved and very, very competitive. And it was so, I started coaching Little League, and I had a couple, you know, parents, you know, it was assistant coach, that were buddies of mine, their kids grew up. And so it was funny because it right away was like, okay, this kid bats first, that kid bats second, this kid bats first, because, you know, he gets on base, and then this kid can push him over. Your third hitter is your best hitter on your team. Your fourth hitter is your power hitter. Your fifth hitter is your power hitter, you know. And it was all the way down like that. And I was like, nah, we're not going to do that. I said, so what I would do is I would get the 10 numbers. I'd put them in the hat. And when kids would come to the dugout, to the game, I'd tell them to pick a number. And whatever number they picked, that's what number they batted. Okay? So you didn't have that person that batted ninth that knew, okay, the reason I'm batting ninth is because I can't hit, you know, and I'm batting, you know, sixth, seventh, and eighth, and ninth because I'm not that good in hitting. But when the kids don't know that, and they're just picking a number, so they didn't care when they were batting eighth or ninth because they knew it was just out of the hat. Also, what started to happen is that kid that would have been ninth, all of a sudden he's batting first some games and second some games, he starts feeling good about himself. And before you know it, we had everybody on the team hitting the ball because they didn't know they weren't supposed to hit the ball, you know, because of their batting. And so when my first started doing that, my assistant coach is going, you can't do that. You know, you're crazy. You know, we can't do it that way. I said, well, you know, don't worry about it. I said, this is the way we're going to do it. It's a Little League, for God's sake. You know, let them, you know, we're gonna have fun and we're going to enjoy it. And I said, I want these kids and, you know, experiencing what it's like to bat first and third and fourth, and let them, you know, let them experience that too. And you'll be surprised when you put them in that position that, you know what, hey, they might come through more than you thought. And then that kid who's, you know, the best hitter on the team and he's batting ninth, he don't care because he knows that we just pulled out of a hat and he's going to get you a big hit when you need it anyway. So, but just little things like that, you're so right. Because once parents, you know, started getting involved, then it's, okay, they want to run a Little League team like you run a professional team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, we got to win this game. So we got to put this kid there and that kid there. That kid's got to go in right field because, you know, nobody hits it there. So, you know, but when you don't get caught up in that and you just move them all around and let them play all positions and let them bat in different orders, and then they develop. And so I run into that all the time, just even with, you know, with coaching is, you know, parents are looking for that scholarship, you know. I always say, too, the athletic scholarship's the most lied about topic in America, you know, because everybody's on a full ride. Everybody's
right.
On a full ride. And being a college coach, if you'd realize how many people aren't or don't get, you know, full athletic scholarships or even partials or a little bit, it's, you know, they think that, okay, we're going to do all this and spend all this money because it's going to get them an athletic scholarship. And you know how it is as you move up the ladder, it gets tougher and tougher. But yeah, those are some of the experiences with parents. And I think definitely the more you can kind of, you know, keep the distance is definitely better. And you have to do that as a parent when you have your own children that are competing.
We had a coach that said, I'm going to make a lineup based on who I like. The most. Yeah. So we, okay, we didn't say anything. So we went to see the wall, you know, the lineup sheet on the wall, and it was blank. He said, I don't like any of you guys. And then, man, hey, Coach, I'm going to tell you, I can tell you exactly where it was. He cussed after this one game. He cussed us out like you will not believe. And it was, I mean, I hate to say it, it was funny. And for me, it was anyway. And he did not like that. But anyway, nowadays, if a coach did that, I'm going to make out the lineup based on who I like, and it was a blank sheet.
Yeah.
Or if he cussed us out, oh my God, it would be, you know. And I think, do you think that maybe players, I mean, maybe not in your world because you have wrestling and you got to be tough, but do you think things have gotten a little soft? You have to, I don't want to say watch what you say, but you just have to be a little delicate. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's in all of society now. You have to be a little more, you know, about the words you use and things like that. There's no doubt that has changed over the years. And, you know, and I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. To be a little more, I think there was, you know, might have been when that was too much, you know. But I just think that you could still get a lot across. And I don't think... again, I don't think young people have changed as much as the parents have changed, you know, in terms of, and I think, you could still, you know, coach young kids and you could still have that discipline of even, you know, older kids and younger kids and still, that competitive edge and being tough. You could teach, you know, how to be, I like to call it competitive even more than tough. You know, just learn how to compete. You know, and to be competitive out there, and then whatever happens, happens. But we're gonna do this, and we're gonna enjoy competition. And I think if you center just around the competing, and then the journey, like you were saying, we kind of lose sight of the journey because that's where you learn all the values and rewards of athletics is in the journey. It's in the practice. It's you know working together. And to achieve something that you couldn't have done yourself. And then I think that that if we get back to that more and lose a little bit more focus on, because the winning is gonna take care of itself if you're doing all the other things right, you know. And I think that's where sometimes if you put the winning first, sports become too pressurized, and that's where we lose a lot of people. It becomes, and then when you see, you know, young when you see parents and at sporting events with young kids and the screaming and the yelling and the, you know, you're just appalled by it because it's my God, you're thinking this is, you know, Little League baseball, or this is, you know, elementary wrestling, or this is this. So it gets crazy sometimes, and that's where you got to put that, you know, back in the bag, you know.
You know, for the record, I batted ninth and played right field, but they told me it was because – no, I'm just kidding. Actually, I did, and my only claim to fame in Little League was I did hit 3 home runs in one game, including a grand slam. And
wow.
But I only had 5 home runs on the season, so that should tell you how good of a hitter I was. It was almost like a fluke game. But you know what? But I will say one thing, and I'll say this publicly. When you don't do well – and I wasn't that good at baseball. I have no illusions. I wasn't that good at baseball. And when you don't have – the coaching that builds you up instead of putting you in right field and batting ninth, you know what you do?
Right.
You say, I hate this sport. And you don't go back and play it. And it's exactly,
exactly.
I hated baseball. I'll be very blunt. Mm-hmm. I hated it. And it wasn't until I actually went off to the military, I started playing softball again and said, oh, okay, this is no fun. It was fun. Now it's a bunch of adult guys are just having beer and a play. Now you like it again. And I think a lot of these parents, you know, they're living vicariously through their kids is what they're doing. They're trying to relive their own glory days as if they even had them, you know, because there's nothing more frustrating than somebody who's never even played the game telling me how to do it. Like, you know, like I said, I was a hockey coach. I played hockey later in life, and then I ended up coaching for a long time. And I never purport to be an expert, but, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than the parent coach in the stands telling you know, what you're doing wrong. And it's like, you know, it's like, well, how come he doesn't just, you know, why don't you just tell your players to try and score more? It's like, oh, Jesus, I never thought of that. I always tell them not to score, you know, and then, you know, take stupid penalties. I definitely tell them that. But you know what? You've done this a long time. If you could give advice to coaches now, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that coaching is about building, use your sport, okay, to build relationships, you know, between you and your athletes, and teach them how more or less is how to enjoy the journey and to get into the process. You know, if you get into the process, into working out hard, into the practices, into pushing each other, into pushing yourself, into being the best you can be, and kind of let the winning, you know, take care of itself, not emphasize so much the winning aspect as it is the overall person. You know, just try to be, you're trying to be a better person overall. And in being a better person, you're going to be a better father, a better, husband, a better employee, a better everything. And then using that to put into whatever sport you have. But I think that's what, you know, coaching is all about is let's bring the best out of each young man or young woman we coach and make them the best that they can be in all areas of their life, you know, and they overlap. If you let them overlap like that, and then you'll see them working harder than, and then being able to instill in them that, I tell my guys, that's why I know we're going to be good when I walk by the restroom and I see guys in there working out without any coaches around, you know, when you're doing it by yourself and when you're doing it with your teammates and, you know, and then when you're off the mat and you see someone walking the wrong way, you say, no, you know what? We're going to do this. We're going to the library. We're going to the workout room or whatever. And so you create a family with each other. And so I think that's the biggest thing about, young coaches, I would tell them is just try to make it a family. Back to where we started.
Coach, final thing. How do you tell your players to deal with tough times?
Well, I always say tough times never last. Tough people do. You know, that's always the first thing. Is
Dr. Robert Shuler.
Yeah.
1982.
And I think what you try to teach is embracing a journey. You know, that's what I'm kind of doing now. You embrace the journey. Life's a journey. Embrace it. So, God's never going to put anything on you that he doesn't feel that you can handle. You know, so whatever's happening in your life at that moment, embrace it. You know, try to live it and embrace it. No matter how stern the struggle or how impossible it may seem, you just embrace the struggle, embrace it all, and think that, hey, I've been chosen to kind of, to weather this storm or it wouldn't have been put in front of me, you know, and as I go through it, I'm going to embrace it and come out a better human being.
All right, Pat, listen, we want to thank you again for taking some time out of your schedule and a lot of words of wisdom here. And I hope people kind of pay attention. You know, all three of us have coached for a long time and we all have experience. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. I've had good supportive parents. I've had parents that I wanted arrested. Right. I've had students I didn't ever want to see again. I have students or, players that you just absolutely think the world of to this day. And, and at the end of the day, it all came down to the person. It was always about the person. It was never about were they good at hockey. Because I had a lot of kids that we used to call them head cases. You know, they were good at hockey, but, man, they were just so screwed up, so whatever. And you're like, man, I cannot coach this kid. He doesn't want to listen. He's just, it's just a miserable experience. And yet you see that talent. And I think to your point, and Claudia, we've kind of talked about this, you give me good players, and they're going to give you the best effort. If you're a good coach, you're going to teach them because they're going to be receptive and they're going to get better. Now, does that mean they're going to be the best in the world? No. But it means that you are going to be – it's going to be the best coaching, is going to be pulled out of you and the most receptive person. But if I got somebody with all the talent in the world and he doesn't want to listen to me, he doesn't want to play my way, we're just going to butt heads. It's going to be a miserable experience for both of us. So, again, I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate your words of wisdom. And, again, I want to thank you very much.
And Coach, what we wanted to do, what we always do, like I said earlier, we've had Mario Andretti on, and I don't think we asked him about one race that he won. We wanted to know about maybe how he got there, journey, as you said, and what he did after his career and stuff like that. And we wanted to pull that out of you as well, the personal side, and we appreciate you taking the time. And, again, Dom thinks the absolute world of you, and he's a great guy. He's been on my show. He's a sponsor for one of my shows, and just love Dom. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Dom Dooch, that's my man.
That's it. But, we'll be seeing you soon, and we'll be talking to you soon. And, again, appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. Continued success.
Very enjoyable.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Pat. All right, folks, we appreciate you all for listening and tuning in, and we had a great guest. And Claudio, as always, I'd love to give you the final word.
We appreciate all you tuning in. We appreciate Coach Pecora for being on. Steve, thank you. And as always, thank you, Mom and Pop.